We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, April 23rd edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D. I guess we'll give RP3 a few hours off on 1037 The Game. For the next 2 hours, we got you from inside the 237 Roof Studios. Remember, there's no job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. A potentially historic day on LSU's campus as Scott Woodward officially announced, and we got to meet the public today, the new athletics director for LSU. We're going to come right out the gate here in about 60 seconds discussing that with Virg Ausberry, native of New Iberia, and the Deputy Director of Athletics for LSU. But it doesn't stop there. We head out to New Orleans. Jeff Duncan, he'll take a break from covering the Zurich Classic to talk Saints draft with us at 4:30. And Shay Dixon begged off the program today. My man is literally in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Shay, whatever you got to do to not have 25 minutes of radio, I get that. We'll have his partner in crime, Billy Embody, from 5:05 until 5:30. Jacked up today. This is going to be a big, big show. And let's start it off right. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, it is time for Virg Ausberry, Deputy Director of Athletics for LSU. Virg, it's been a big day. Thanks for taking time with us. How are you?
Been doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. And with the introduction of Scott Woodward, I'll begin by asking you this. What do you think the significance of today will be long-term when we look back for LSU athletics?
I think it'll be a great thing for LSU athletics. And, Ben, what it does, I think it brings the LSU community together. I think this is, what he and I here, both LSU guys, we know pretty much everyone throughout the LSU system and everybody who supports us. And there'll be new people we'll be meeting. But the bottom line, though, I think this will be a time where all of us will be on the same page and moving in the same direction, not only for the athletic department, but the whole institution.
You know, I thought it was interesting. The Baton Rouge Business Report yesterday came out with the nugget that Jay Darden, Louisiana Commissioner of Administration, made the first point of contact. But I'll ask you this. What role, if any, Virg, did you play in the recruitment of Scott Woodward?
You know, Scott and I are very good friends, and we go back a long, long way. And it wasn't until the last minute until we knew, you know, kind of what was shaking out, what was happening here. But Scott and I keep in touch. We talk about it every 2 weeks, every week. We throw a lot of ideas and things at each other and compare notes. He's at Washington and at Texas A&M. So we kept that line of communication open. And in this business, Ben, you know, you don't reinvent the wheel. I tell people, you take a little idea here, idea from there, you know, what schools are doing or what they're trying to do, and then you have to figure out, do you have the revenues to do it? And you have the resources to do those type of things, and you go with it. And if you don't, then you try to make them another way to do and try to attain the same goals that they are doing. So really, it's not a magic wand here. The thing we have to get and do is work hard, find out what the student athletes and the coaches need to be successful off the field and on the field in all of our sports, and then just the evaluation of the whole program. Like I said, we're not a broken department. I think we're in great shape. I think what we have to do is look at the areas where we can improve in, and the areas we're doing great in, try to improve from there, just make it better.
You know, I'm glad you said that, not a broken department, because my next question, what are some of the areas where this athletic department took strides during the Joe Oliva era?
Oh, just look at the facilities we've built over the time. You know, we got here, you know, we didn't have the when Joe first got here, we just completed the indoor basketball practice facility. We just finished the baseball stadium, softball stadium. Now you have a new tennis facility. You have a new gymnastics facility. You have an indoor tennis facility, which LSU was the only one in the conference that didn't have. We fixed up the field house. We've redone the track. We cleaned up around Tiger Stadium. If you remember, you walked around Tiger Stadium and all the broken windows throughout the old dorms. We changed all those out and fixed those up. So there's a lot of things we did to to help the athletic department in our footprint right here. Soccer, softball, adding on to the softball and soccer, baseball complexes, batting cages. So there's a lot of things that we did. Upgrading the golf course where our men's golf team play at the University Club. Those are the type of things. And building new football operations center. Really spending $40 million more to upgrade it.
Talking now with Verge Osbury on 103.7 The Game, and one of the hats you wear, Verge, is as football scheduling czar. And when it comes to football, your area, what are some of the things that you'll tell Scott Woodward in regards to his look under the hood of that program?
You know, we kept in touch. We've been doing one thing about football scheduling. We all have to talk to each other because we have to figure out who's out there trying to play us and make the bid war go up. I think the format that we have is one of the best in the country in scheduling football games. You know, we play neutral site games and we play home and home. So I think we have a good mixture of both. Sometimes we do neutral and home and home. So we'll continue with that pattern. You look at our schedules, they're very good into the future. There's some small changes we have to make to certain parts of the schedule. But overall, be competitive. We're not going to do anything that's outlies where we are not competitive with other teams in the SEC. So you look at all of our schedules throughout the conference. I know sometimes people complain about the non-conference schedule other than the big game we have to play, but that's just the way it is right now. And we're all going to do to give our teams the advantage. But the big thing we want to do is win and play in the college football playoff.
You know, earlier today, Scott Woodward said he hasn't really been debriefed when it comes to Will Wade. You've been in that building, and I think that situation probably have been trying for just about anyone in a position of authority. Has it taken a toll at all on the collective inside that building?
You know, like I said earlier, Ben, I'm talking to people, you know, it's time for us to come for healing, okay? And like Scott said earlier, Will Wade's our basketball coach. That's where I took it. He's our basketball coach, and he's our basketball coach. We're going to support him 100%. We're not going to waver off of that. So that's a process. That's probably been a long process to this. But right now, Will's the coach. We support Will 100%. We go from there.
And I got to tell you, Verge, personally, I love some of the response. And it was kind of unprovoked from Woodward when it comes to sports gambling. And whether it's that or we're talking about the ability to bring tablets, use tablets inside the game, luxury seating, how do you look at the ever-evolving fan experience, and especially as it relates to LSU athletics?
Well, it's overall the big picture also. And, you know, people talk about people leaving early, the younger generation, and those type of things. And it's true. It's falling. It's falling not only at LSU, but all over the country. It's great. And where he came from, University of Washington, where he was before. And Alabama, look at all of them. All of us are having the same problems. It's the thing you have to do is look outside the box and think of some things that most people think about, wow, we need to think of it like that. You know, a few years ago, people were talking about DJs at basketball games. Everybody thought that was a dumb idea. But, you know, to get the younger generation involved in the game and to come to the game and your students, that's what they like. So a lot of times we have to tweak and change things that not traditional all the time, but don't give up on our traditions. You know, still have the same traditions of Tiger Stadium and what we do in our arenas. But at the same time, there might be new ways of doing things to get a different demographic into your arenas. But that's how we have to survive. If not, we can all die. But football attendance is dying throughout the country. It's going down every year. It's not improving. So we're going to look at doing different type of things, even if that's changing scheduling one day, and maybe the conference comes up when they say maybe, you know, you play two teams from the football conferences, the Power Five conferences, or you play three teams from a Power Five conference and maybe drop a game or change a game, maybe play 11 games instead of 12 games, or add more teams to the playoffs. But everything's on the table. You know, you talked about game in the day. Yes, that's happening. It's legal. It's going to be legal in mostly all the states, sports gambling. And, you know, the thing to do is protect ourselves from that, too. And so you get revenue and generate revenue off of that to protect our student athletes through compliance and rules and regulations of education. Those are the things to do. You know, serving alcohol in the stadium, drink beer in the stadium. That's something, you know, we learned that you get the pro arenas around the country. They have less problems than colleges do. You can bring alcohol into the venue. So those are the things where you have to think outside the box a little bit. We can still try to work on how can you improve traffic, and which cars could pick up and fly and bend and go over traffic and have a HOV lane that way. But that might not be possible for a long time into our future. But those are the things that the fans talk about, and those things that we're going to try to work on, roll our sleeves up and work on. And the things we're going to improve on and make it a better fan experience for our fans.
I thought it was a great piece, Verge, in The Advocate by Sheldon Mickles, and learning about your jogging buddy, Scott Woodward, whether it's the jogging or fishing, as he alluded to today, Does anybody know how competitive that cat is?
He's very competitive, and Scott always been that way. And Scott has a love for LSU. You know, since we did those jogs, I mean, Scott was very competitive then. You know, the harder I push him, the harder he'll push it. He was a jogger, Ben. Like I told people, I wasn't a jogger. I was a football guy, okay? 40 yards, I make a tackle. Other than that, you know, I'm not chasing nobody 100 yards down the field. And but he got me into jogging, and I got to get him back into jogging, it looked like. I told him that and working out with me. But, yeah, we have a great relationship. We both have similar majors. I'm a history major. He's a political science major. I'm political science is my minor. And so we discuss and talk about those things a lot and have great deep discussions on more things outside of athletics.
We'll get you out of here on this. Our guest has been Virg Ausberry, Deputy Director of Athletics for LSU. Whether in your capacity as a student athlete with the Tiger Athletic Foundation, now with the athletic department, can you recall a day like today where everybody in the building felt in lockstep and everybody was in support of what was going on and really fervently in support?
You know, it's been a long time. The last time we felt like this here is when we had Skip Bertman, Nick Saban, Mark Emmert at the helm. That was in the early 2000s where everything was just moving along. Football was winning and basketball was winning. And, you know, we have all those pieces of the puzzle now. Like I said, the foundation isn't broken. You know, Coach always picked up and put us in a position where we can compete now, and I think we compete for the SEC championship. You're great in basketball. You know, Paul Maneri always going to be there at baseball at the end. I count on him. Softball is doing well. Track and field is doing well. Men's golf, women's golf, tennis, beach volleyball. You name the sports. Gymnastics finished second in the country. So we're doing well. You know, that foundation that we put in place in 2003 has still been carrying the athletic department for all these years. Now, we've done things. We've done great things with the budget and trying to keep us in the black. We've helped the university of a tune of $10 million a year and done other things to help the campus. But that foundation that was put in 2002, it still carries us today. And that's the important part. And so that's why everybody's getting this sense about, okay, we're putting the team back together again who helped us get to where we got and bring us back to that championship level. But that's what we're going to do, Ben. We'll compete for championships here. Just being in the middle of the pack isn't good enough. And I think we give the student-athletes and the coaches the resources so they can compete at that highest level.
Can't tell you how much I enjoyed this, Virg. Our listeners in Acadiana, too, thank you for taking time out today to do it.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
And you as well. Awesome. I mean, really. Just about across the board. It's been a day that a lot of people that love the purple and gold have been looking forward to, and Virg Ausberry firmly entrenched right in the middle of it. I've got some thoughts. You probably do as well. You can follow up on the other side of this break. 706-0111. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, just getting started on a Tuesday on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
If we're not rowing this boat in this direction, we're going to get our butts kicked in Tuscaloosa. We're going to get our butts kicked in Opelika. We're going to get our butts kicked in Gainesville. And trust me, I have no intention of doing that. And so I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that we're rowing this thing in the right direction.
I love that he didn't actually say Auburn there. We're not going to Opelika and getting our butts kicked. That was Scott Woodward. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back in on 103.7 The Game. Got plenty of time for your phone calls in this segment. Jeff Duncan coming aboard to talk Saints draft at 4:30. And don't forget, we're out of here at 6 today. That's when the pregame show starts. Doug Thompson, Chris Blair, getting you ready for LSU Lamar. 6:30 first pitch from the box. Landon Marceau getting the start for Allen Dunn and the Tigers on the mound. And another quick caveat about that game tonight. It is Prostate Cancer Awareness Night. Bill Frankis, longtime LSU SID, voice of Alec Box Stadium, throwing out the first pitch. I love that idea. Pretty cool interview, if I could say so. Hopefully you feel that way with Virg Ausberry. And look, I anticipated he would answer the Will Wade question that way because he's in lockstep with his AD and his friend, Scott Woodward. And that's a lot of what Woodward had to say today. He did use two words, Woodward, that I'm going to refuse to read into too much. And I'm paraphrasing here, but Woodward more or less said today that Will Wade is our basketball coach, and until then, I 100% support him, or he has my 100% support. I'm going to choose not to read into the words until then, like I said, all that much. Maybe it's a post-Lenten resolution. Don't be a skeptical a-hole. So I'll keep that on the bulletin board, and I'll read it over and over again. So I'm going to choose not to read into that too much. But when I first heard it, listening live on 103.7 The Game, I said, whoa, until what? What do you mean until then? But I think right now, after what Commissioner Greg Sankey said yesterday, I think there's an understanding that nobody quite knows how this is going to end, but for the time being, he's the coach. I think that's kind of the order of the day. The FBI thing certainly lessens the chances that he'll get axed that way, but I got to think there's a chance the NCAA is on campus, right, and stays on campus. In fact, a pretty good chance. What's going to be interesting, how does that go down? Because one of Scott Woodward's best friends, a guy that he mentioned multiple times in his interview today, or his introductory presser, Dr. Mark Emmert, well, he leads the NCAA. So that's something to chew on for a little bit. But Clint, you and I have got a sink or swim question of the day. Time to tee that bad boy up. I'll do it right after the music. Exciting and new. All right, let's get to it. Your sink or swim question of the day. Which LSU head coach, if any, should feel the most heat with a new AD in town? I'm giving you four options. And for our social media friends, they love this. They don't have to think. It's not open-ended. You got options. Behind door number one, Ed Ogeron. Number two, Nikki Fargus. Number three, Will Wade. Or number four, and this might be a very viable one for many of you, none of them. What do you think? Which one should feel the most heat? Football, men's basketball, women's basketball, or none of them? Let us know. 706-0111. Clint, you can lead us off.
I think it's easy. I think we've talked about it the last couple of days on this station is Nikki Fargus. I feel like she's the one that's probably going to wind up feeling the heat first, more because of the fact that of what we heard Scott Woodward talk about in the introductory press conference, where he's going to wind up listening a lot more to what the people have to say, and that's probably more so the higher-paying people, if you will, in that sense. I think she's going to be the first person to be looked at as having a lot of heat on her, like right here, right now.
Now, there's a difference as well between, okay, you need to step it up, you need to toe the line, you need to put this person on your staff, or you're going. There's a difference between that and you're gone, just right now.
Yeah.
Get the box, pack your things, you're gone. And so we'll see which of those two it is, but it's going to be either one of those two for sure for the woman that's leading LSU women's basketball. You're right. There's no question. The answer here is Nikki Fargus, but part of the reason I asked this question, I wanted to rank the three. And so I'll take this opportunity to do just that. Again, you got some time to call in. You can answer this question. You can react to Virg Allsbury, whatever your pleasure. 706-0111. The most heat is under the seat of Nikki Fargus. Number two is probably Will Wade, but I don't know that's a call that Woodward's going to have to make. Either the NCAA forces his hand potentially, and I've got some different theories on that. Not sure how much they need to come on the air. We'll see. The relationship between Woodward and Emmert makes this thing intriguing because you could see on one hand where Emmert wouldn't want to drop the hammer on his friend and on a place that he led for a while. On the other hand, you could see where if this thing gets ugly for some reason, he may tell Woodward, you need to cut the head of the snake off here or else the NCAA is going to be on campus for quite some time and then everybody's going under the microscope. A lot of different ways this could unfold. But I don't think that I don't think that Woodward comes in looking to be headhunting for somebody like Will Wade. I don't get that sense at all. But number three in line, and I find this intriguing, it's Ed Ogeron. A guy that many weren't sure was the best candidate. He certainly wasn't the first candidate. We know that was Jimbo Fisher, maybe followed by Tom Herman, and then it was Coach O to replace Les Miles. Well, here we are, what, 2 years removed, thereabouts? A little more than 2 years removed, perhaps? And Ed Ogeron is the one of these coaches that seems to be in the best standing. And I loved what Woodward had to say today. By the way, it was a dynamite press conference. We talk about winning the press conference. The guy was just genuine. He felt like Louisiana to me. And he went out of his way to mention certain people. You could say to even kiss the rings of certain people. Collis Temple Jr. would be one of those. I took notice of that. Skip Bertman was one of those. Mark Emmert was one of those. I took notice of all of those, and they were the right things to do. But he also made sure to point out Coach O. Talked about how outstanding of a job he has done. And the part I love the most, I'll basically quote him here. He said, "I remember when I was at UW, and he was kicking our ass when it came to recruiting when Ed was at USC." So if you think he doesn't have a lot of admiration for the guy coming in, I think again. And so that's what's something I think needed to be brought up, and I wanted to early in the show today. Coach O seems to be in really good standing, and that's not surprising, right? Just got a little bump in pay and tenure in terms of his years that he got extended. And so you look at who's maybe on the hot seat, and he is not a guy that you would point to anytime quickly. Now, is it good for any coach when a new AD comes on campus? Probably not, but there are always degrees of good, right? There are degrees of bad. I think we can all agree upon that. All right, dynamite way to start the show with Virg Ausberry right out the chute. We got Jeff Duncan coming aboard. He's covering the Zurich Classic, but he's going to take a break from that and talk NFL draft with us. Saints, they're not on the clock for Thursday night, but could they trade up into that first round? That'll be my first question to Jeff Duncan. That plus O-line, D-line, which is the bigger priority? And is it a foregone conclusion with Bridgewater, Taysom Hill, in tow, behind Breezes, that they don't need to go quarterback in this draft? I would think yes, but I'll defer, as always, to the expert. And don't forget Billy Embody today, filling in for Shea Dixon. Double dose at 5:05. He talks Scott Woodward and recruiting at 5:15. He's going to fire away at me. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're fired up, and we're coming right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Iron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Right back in, and hey, it's time to talk NFL draft. We got to go to a golf course to do that. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game. And out to New Orleans we go. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Jeff Duncan, NOLA.com, and the Times-Picayune. Jeff, welcome back into the show. I want to talk Saints, but I know you're out at the Zurich Classic. Set the scene for us out there. You playing golf with Alvin Gentry and Sean Payton?
Not today, but I just got done talking to Sam Burns, you know, the former LSU standout, who is really one of the rising stars on the tour. He's playing here for the second year in a row, and I think a guy that is going to end up being LSU's best golfer since probably, maybe ever. He's that good. He's definitely one of the best, probably since David Toms, I'd say, Ben.
It's a big statement. All right, I'm going to get you to try and make one about the New Orleans Saints, and I'm sure you've been peppered with this question for the last couple of weeks. What are the chances that they, again, trade up in the first round? Difference, obviously, this year being they currently don't have anything as far as real estate in the opening round. But what are the chances in your mind that they draft Thursday night?
Well, I think it's very remote, slim and none. The circumstances just don't dictate a trade up. The roster is already pretty set. There are very few holes in this roster. There's no need for the Saints to be desperate. I think the only reason they would trade up is if, say, one of their top 30 or top 40 prospects somehow is still sitting on the board in the, you know, early 50s or something, somebody that they just felt like was such a good value that it would precipitate a trade up. But, this is a different roster than it was a couple of years ago when they traded up to get Alvin Kamara, or when they traded up to get Mark Ingram. Those rosters weren't nearly as talented as this team. So I don't think they need to trade up. I don't think there's anything that would cause them to want to spend more draft capital in the future.
Jeff Duncan, our guest. You can read his work, and you should. He's a columnist for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. Follow him on Twitter, at Jeff Duncan, _. At 62nd overall, toward the back end of the second round, if they get a chance for best overall, then that may dictate things. But if they get their druthers, what do you think is the biggest position or two of need there?
I think either line would be a position that they would be happy to bolster. Just strictly looking down the road, the offensive line right now, interior play, they've got a new center in Nick Easton. We don't know exactly how he's going to fit into this offense or even how good he is, to be honest with you. I know they're paying him a lot of money, but he's still an unproven commodity in this New Orleans Saints offense. And then both guards, Andres Pete's only under contract for this coming season. And beyond that, Larry Warford is only under contract for two more years. So I think the interior line, certainly when you're looking down the road, is an area they need to bolster. And then I think defensive end remains, they need a third defensive end to go with Cam Jordan and Marcus Davenport. You're going to rotate those guys. They're almost starters, and you have three ends. I think they could always use pass rush help. Trey Hendrickson's a guy they like, but I feel like he's, in 2 years, really hasn't made an impact, and they're always looking to upgrade that spot.
Would you say that, considering what they did with Teddy Bridgewater in this offseason, knowing that they've also got Taysom Hill, who they can use in certain different roles as a quarterback, would you say that there's no chance that they try to go speculative on the replacement for Drew Brees in this draft?
Well, I would say no chance, but I'd say it'd be pretty remote as well. I think they like both Bridgewater. I don't think they like that. They do like Bridgewater and Taysom Hill a lot. They also like DT Barrett, who's on the practice squad. He's a guy that people forget about, but I know Sean Payton's really high on him. They feel like they've got the best quarterback room they've ever had here, and that's saying a lot because they've got a lot of good quarterbacks in and out the door. But Bridgewater is clearly the backup. But you got to also remember this, Ben. Midseason this year, somebody loses a starting quarterback that might be a playoff contender. Teddy Bridgewater could be a valuable trade asset for this team. They could garner a top pick for him in a trade if they feel good about Taysom Hill being the backup in the future. So there's a lot of things could play into that. So I think they're always going to be in the quarterback market to some degree, but it'd have to be somebody they really, really value late in the draft.
We led off on the idea that, look, are they going to trade into the first round? You said remote, right? Slim to none. It's been my contention, probably more likely this time around, that they use some of those back into the draft picks and try to get back into the second round for a second time, or maybe into the third round. Is that more likely? Is that something in the NFL that these franchises will consider? The Saints trying to find a way to maybe get two Friday night picks?
Well, it could happen. I mean, any kind of trade is always going to be commensurate with who's willing to trade with you, what's the likelihood of the player being there that the other team don't want. I mean, there's just so much, it's almost impossible to predict any of those things. I would say this, the Saints are so deep right now, they don't have a lot of roster spots or even to be open for these draft picks. So if they're thinking along those lines, then sure, yeah. If you see a player that you really value and you feel like you've only got really maybe three open roster spots that are being truly competed for, it makes sense to go get that player because the guys you're taking in the sixth, seventh round probably aren't going to make the team anyway, so you're really not giving up much.
More than anything, Jeff, we appreciate you helping us cross some ideas off the list, and this might be another one. Do you think the Saints would be looking to move anybody on the current roster for this draft night? Or maybe not that they're looking to, but that they're willing to if the right opportunity comes along.
You know, I've been asked that a lot, and I really don't think so. I mean, most of the time, players get traded before the draft. It's kind of unusual for someone to get traded during the draft. It happens, but it's very unusual for roster building purposes. And I just don't know who the Saints have. They don't really have incredible depth at every position. They've got solid depth in almost every position, but they don't really have the luxury, I feel like, to trade a player. You know, you're not going to trade a Mike Thomas or a Marshawn Lattimore or any of these young stars you have. You know, those guys are indispensable players, and then I just don't feel like they have anybody else that's that valuable beyond them that someone would be willing to trade for. You know, Andres Pete is a guy gets kicked around a lot, but I'm not sure what he would demand in the open market from another team, why they would feel like they need to trade for Andres Pete when they could get a guy in the draft for much cheaper than his $9 million price tag. So all those things, I think, come into play. I'd be really surprised to see them make a trade.
Jeff, a big chunk of our listeners follow and frequent both LSU and the Saints. What would you tell that group of people when it comes to Joe Brady, the difference he made for the Saints franchise and what he might be able to bring to Steve Ensminger and LSU?
Well, I think he's clearly going to be the offensive coordinator in waiting once Steve Ensminger moves on. We all know Ensminger is highly valued by Ed Orgeron, and he'll have a place there as long as he wants. But they brought in Joe Brady to assist him, and I think he's going to be heavily influencing what's going on offense. He's very well respected in the Saints building. I know Drew Brees and Sean Payton think a lot of him, and I think that was a great hire by Ed Orgeron. And this is one area that I think Ed Orgeron's really improved from, say, his first time around at Ole Miss. Improving his staff, the quality of his staff, and keeping his ear to the ground on being willing and flexible to adapt and evolve to modern college football. And that's what Joe Brady is going to bring to this offensive staff, is I think his cutting-edge knowledge of the RPO game and modern quarterback play in college football is a welcome addition. And I think it's going to help them recruit guys across the country at that position. He's a great addition.
He is Jeff Duncan, NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. Leading into the draft, please let our listeners know just what to expect from your byline, any podcasting you may be doing. They want to follow you. What are they going to get?
Well, look, I'll have a take on every draft pick that the Saints make. I'll obviously still be covering the Zurich Classic at the same time. We always double dip this time of year, Ben. It's kind of a hectic week in New Orleans annually. So I'll be covering the golf tournament during the day and the draft at night, and my colleagues Luke Johnson and Josh Katzenstein will be all over the NFL draft every day. And Sean Payton and Will Lutz, the Saints kicker, out here right now playing around the course. I'm going to try and find Payton afterwards, see if he can tell me who's going to get drafted on Thursday. I'll let you know.
Hey, good luck with that mission. I know how busy you are. Jeff, thank you for doing this. Enjoy the time.
Yeah, anytime, Ben. Thanks for having me on, bud.
Not bad work for hour number one, right? Already going to Baton Rouge, now New Orleans. Who knows where we're heading next? Okay, I do. Because I've got my Magic 8-Ball. We got to hit a break. Then we come back, take more of your phone calls, 706-0111. Respond to what you heard, talk Saints draft. Go back in on our sink or swim question of the day. Don't forget Billy Embody with us, taking Shea Dixon's place, 505 until 530. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and yes, we'll be back post-haste on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
I think our view is it's a fairly deep draft, and we're pretty confident that we're going to get a good player at 62, yes. You know, we'll see when we get there, but it's pretty hard to go from 62 into the first round, you know, but we'll see what happens.
And there's Mickey Loomis, a couple of different cuts. They'll get a good player at 62. Well, they've proven they could do that in the recent past, right? But it's going to be very difficult to go from the 62nd overall pick to the first round, and that echoes what we just heard from Jeff Duncan. Welcome back in. Bumper to Bumper Sports, taking you home on a Tuesday on 103.7 The Game. We got phone lines open before Billy Embody at 5:05. Call now, otherwise you might get buried until about 5:35. The number is 706-0111. Another reminder to issue, I'm fired up about this Friday. We had such a good crowd on Good Friday at Rufino's on the River. We're going back in. We should have Ruff and Rodriguez in tow this time. It's always better when he rides shoddy, frankly. With the type of personality he is, it's probably me is the one that's riding shoddy. But when we both go full blast, it's a beautiful thing. And you ought to come join us if you get a chance. B2BS this Friday, 4 until 6. We're going right up until the first pitch of LSU at Bama on Friday. Come out to Rufino's on the River. Celebrate life at 921 Camellia Boulevard. All right, we've got an opportunity for you to call and talk Scott Woodward, what you thought of his introductory presser. We carried it here on Acadiana Sports Station. You can also go in on the Saints draft, and that's the road I'll go down for a few moments here. So a few cuts you heard there from Mickey Loomis regarding where they're at 62, and I'm still fairly focused on the rest of the Saints' bounty of, let's just call it what it is, late-round draft picks. Is there any way to package up that poo-poo platter and move up further? Is there any way to try and get another second rounder, as I mentioned to Jeff, a third rounder? You'll notice I'm big on that theme this week. I think that's the only way that you move into a round where you might get someone who actually sticks on the 53-man roster. And I think Jeff Duncan just agreed with that, right? There aren't a lot of roster spots up for grabs. There aren't many guys that they're also looking to jettison. Look, I get that he went to one extreme when he said, you're not trading Mike Thomas, you're not trading Marshawn Lattimore. Well, that's a given. Are there some of the other guys? I've bounced around the idea of Cam Meredith. Are there some of the platoon rotational guys that, along with a fifth and a sixth rounder this year, help you get to a second or third rounder? I don't know. Maybe. Theoretically so. I just would like to see them get guys that might stick on the roster. And I know that Cam Meredith will, right? And so even saying that, I'm just showing some of my prejudice against the player who looked pretty good for 1 year in Chicago, was injured his last season there, and now he's injured his first season here. Boy, those things don't often work out too well. I get a little bit of something stuck in my craw when it comes to guys who are chronically injured, especially at the skill positions. I just start to give up some hope. Maybe that's on me. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for them to make moves in this draft that help the back end of the 53-man roster. Probably not a lot toward the front end. Hopefully some in the middle portions. But a little bit more for Mickey Loomis while we've got some time. He opened up on last year's first-round pick, and this is a guy they had to trade up to get. What does he remember about that process, and just where is Marcus Davenport today?
He's made progress, and you know he had a couple health things that slowed him down a little bit, but we like Marcus, and we're looking for big things from him.
So the truth is this. After getting rid of Alex Okafor, and again, he left at free agency, it was clear that they wanted to spend their money elsewhere, and I think that was wise because, in part, they have confidence in Davenport. So Okafor was a great stopgap, but now it's time for your first rounder to put up or shut up. Yes, he'll have some help. They went and got a couple of pieces in the offseason, especially the cat from New England, who I think is going to be dynamite. But they need Davenport to play like a first rounder. Last year, he got to sit, learn a little bit, flashes of brilliance in a couple of games. The Cowboys game leaps to mind. They're going to need him to take another step this year. A few more on Mickey Loomis on the Saints 2019 NFL draft. And here he says, look, there's no doubt about it. And this will echo what we got from Ken Trahan yesterday. Don't ever underestimate how important Sean Payton is in that room.
We, you know, most of the decision-making and all that's, you know, done by the time we get to the draft. Then it's just a matter of, hey, how does it fall? We've been on the same page for 13 years now, 14 years, whatever it is. So it'll work smoothly.
What he didn't say there is that it's gotten a lot more smooth. Smoother, there's the word. Since Jeff Ireland came around, right? So you inject him into that situation. And again, I'll bring to the forefront what Ken Trahan said yesterday because I completely agree. It's the player evaluation. And so they know who they want early. Sean Payton knew he wanted AK-41 a couple of years ago out of Tennessee. That worked out quite nicely for everybody. We'll see if they find a steal that's 80% of that caliber this time around. Loomis was asked next about the idea of trading up or trading back. Boy, I sure hope they don't pull a New England. How do you trade back? Are you going to get rid of 62? I think this question is probably more about will you trade up?
It's a combination of both of those things. You know, look, every year I say that we're open to trading back and trading forward, and every year we trade forward, right? So obviously that's been our history. And that comes from, man, finding a player that we really like and we target that we believe can help our team, a player that we have a vision for, and going and getting them.
Self-assessment is key. They know they like to trade forward. I'm not sure they're going to have that opportunity this time around. One more from Loomis, and this ties back to something that we got to last week when the Saints' schedule seemed to be a little more in concrete as opposed to in sand. What does the GM of the Saints think about their draw this fall?
Yeah, look, I kind of like the schedule, I'll be honest with you. I mean, you know, our opponents are predetermined, so it's just a matter of when we play them. Look, we got our bye right in the middle of the season. I like that. You know, those first 4 weeks are tough opponents, but we're going to have to play them anyway during the course of the year. So it's not like you can avoid, you know, playing teams that you know you perceive as being pretty good. I think in the first half we're playing five of our eight, I think, are playoff teams from a year ago. That's just the way it goes. You know, look, we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to playing the guys on the schedule that we have, and you know, we've got, what do we have, five, I think, national games, four prime time, three of those that are home. I like that, too. So I think we like our schedule.
Some people in the 237 Roof Studios, brought to you by Lafayette Roofing, thought the Saints would start slow last year. Others, you know, like me, thought they'd be 12-4 overall. So, Clint, we'll let you take your medicine there. And we will be making Saints picks, but good news for you, we've only got about, 4 months before we do that. We've only got about a minute left in this hour. I'll close up shop with one word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Mend. And it's great to see Landon Marceau on the mend and, well, back to action. LSU plays Lamar tonight, 6:30, and he'll get the first call for Allen Dunn. Add him to the list of guys, right? Mikhail Hilliard is already going through it, and he's kind of out of the other side. Jaden Hill still going through it. Eric Walker is going through it, and he has come out the other side. They could use Landon Marceau. Right now, you've got Cole Henry, Eric Walker. They're your steadies. You're hoping to get Zach Hess back, but Marceau would make a large difference come tournament format time. But tonight, he's back in action. He's been on the mend. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're halfway home. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back in with Billy Embody on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We're off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And soon the three-man weave will be in full effect. Billy Embody taking Shea Dixon's place. That's coming here in about a minute. Now, we are live inside the 237 Roof Studios. Remember, there's no job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. A lot of talk about the Saints and the draft at the back half of hour one. I can offer up this tidbit because Sean Payton offered it up at the Zurich Classic within the last 15-20 minutes. He confirmed that the Saints will stay out west between weeks 2 and 3 of the regular season. That's between games at the LA Rams and at Seattle. The Saints will not come home that week. That seems like a small thing, but I love it. I mean, I absolutely love refusing to get jet lagged. And I believe they're both 325 games. Not sure how much that'll really matter, but I just love the idea of the Saints getting a little bit of that Cali weather in, right? Just stick out there, make it short travel, and then hopefully make short work out of both the Rams, especially the Rams, and the Seattle Seahawks. All right, enough of that. We got a lot going on. And we need our fix when it comes to LSU, Scott Woodward, and, of course, LSU recruiting.
Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out.
It's time for Shea Dixon of Go 247.
Silly Clint, tricks are for kids. No, it's not Shea. We're going to switch it up. It's time for Billy Embody. Go247.com. Billy, welcome in today. You're filling some big shoes, but I know that you can wear them.
It's a tough challenge. Tough challenge to fill in for Shea.
Wait until you're the one asking the questions, but that comes on the other side of the break. You were at the Scott Woodward introductory press conference earlier today, and so I'll ask you some questions there first, and we'll start off on a lighthearted note. Was it more press conference or more pep rally? Where did it blur the line there?
Oh, that's a really good question to start off with. I think it trended over a little bit to more of a homecoming more than anything. I mean, you know, just him running down the list of people that, you know, he keeps in touch with, that he's friends with, and that have welcomed him back to LSU was just impressive. And his command of the room, I thought, was outstanding. I think it was between those two. I thought it was more of a press conference, but it did have such a homecoming feeling for Scott, and he kind of reminisced on, you know, his early days going to LSU games and, you know, before moving on to his time as a student, and just all the people in his life that have impacted him in such a way that he was, you know, standing up there as LSU's new AD, and all of those people had an impact on him as well while he was a student and growing up too.
He said so much, as you know, Billy, about his formative years and kind of LSU being blended into all those experiences. But, you know, maybe you didn't expect this. I'll come out of left field. The first technical question I'll ask you, I thought it was interesting that without provocation, he went there when it comes to sports gambling. What were your impressions on his answer there, and maybe how some of that could get integrated into the college athletics realm?
That was probably my biggest takeaway, and not just because he talked about sports gambling or anything like that, but it showed me how forward thinking he is, and this in a time where and so many people that have been around this department have known for so long that LSU tends to move a little slower than everywhere else, you know, whether it comes to facilities or making decisions. It just, there doesn't seem to be that trend setting type of decision maker at the top. Well, there is now, and Scott Woodward did an outstanding job talking about sports gambling as a way to integrate it into the fan experience and kind of improve that. He also talked about being a proponent of alcohol sales in the stadium and kind of improving that as well. He shared a lot that I felt reflected that forward-thinking mentality, and that was my biggest takeaway from the entire press conference.
Talking shop with Billy Embody, filling in for Shea Dixon, both of them do a dynamite job on the 24/7 platform, primarily covering LSU sports and recruiting. All right, we got to go there on Will Wade as well. And I think my friend counted, who was listening on the radio, he texted me, "Ben, why did it take like 16 questions for somebody to go there on Will Wade?" But eventually we got to that point. I'm trying not to read much into the fact that he said the words "until then." Did you read into that? Because, look, for those that are just tuning in for the 5 o'clock hour, Scott Woodward said, and I'll paraphrase, "Will Wade is our basketball coach. I'm behind him 100%. He's got 100% of my support." But he used the words "until then." Did that mean anything?
I don't think so. I think it just speaks to an athletic director that isn't going to sit up there and speak in absolutes and say, "Look, this is what it's going to be" on his first day of the job, and he admitted after that he hadn't even talked to Will Wade. So I wouldn't read too much into that. Now, you know, look, they could meet, and there could be a different decision made, you know, in a couple days. I'm not saying that's going to be the case, but I didn't read anything into that more than him just saying, "Look, he's the coach. I support him fully until that's the case." I mean, he could say that about Ed Ogeron. He could say that about Palmieri, he could say that about Nicky Fargus, any of those coaches. That same statement really applies to, there's just obviously not that cloud kind of hanging over those programs as much as kind of the Will Wade situation.
Billy, I also thought it was interesting that when asked about the discrepancy, I think it was Ed Daniels, WGNO, maybe between the deep pockets in College Station and what he's got here at LSU, he made one of several Civil War references, right? And the ultimate takeaway is that resources win wars. How does that apply to LSU, where they're at, and maybe where they want to go with Woodward at the helm?
Well, they've got a massive capital campaign going on right now, and I think that was part of the reasons that you know, Joe Oliva was transitioned out of his role and Scott Woodward was brought in. He's a really, really good fundraiser. He understands both the academic and athletic sides of universities, and fundraising is going to be a huge deal for him. And you know, there's a lot to do, especially when you look to the basketball side of things, the PMAC and those basketball facilities. He's going to have to address those in his tenure early on, I think, especially when you talk about competing in the SEC and competing nationally with some of these programs that have outstanding facilities across the board. And so it was really his first pitch to donate, to jump on board, to try and change the culture LSU facilities and support and all of those things, to get them on par with the likes of Texas A&M and Alabama and Clemson and some of these other programs that have just dumped an obscene amount of money into their programs, whereas LSU might not have as much. I mean, they have in their own right. I mean, right? But it's not on that monstrous level of some of the other college athletic programs.
No, that makes complete sense. I'll ask you this next. Myself, probably 90%+ of the people listening were in the Acadiana area today. So what that means, we weren't in the same room that you were. What was that room like? And forget about the press conference versus the pep rally. Everything I've read tells me that if you are a power broker in Baton Rouge, whether or not you work for LSU, your tuchus was in that room today. I'd love to hear your reaction to that.
Yeah, I mean, from board of supervisors to past coaches to current coaches, you know, James Carville was in attendance. I mean, I'm trying to think of at least a half decent word to describe it, but it had this, the room almost had a swagger about it, that everyone in there knew that this is a great hire. This is huge for the future of LSU. This is one that says, look, we are going to be this national, true national power in college athletics again, and Scott Woodward's going to be the one to lead us there. Everyone that sat to my left, right, on those sides of the aisle where it was reserved for, you know, dignitaries or whatever, everyone had this confidence, this smile, this, you know, good job. Everyone, I mean, the amount of good job said to everybody around the room, and I remember Ed Ogeron was sitting just a little bit away from me, and you could see him going down the row of a board of supervisors saying, good job, great hire, good job. And so I think that kind of says it all. There was a swagger about the room that they knew that they had gotten the man that can really lead this LSU athletics department into the future and be kind of at the forefront of the future and being a top college athletics program.
Billy, to be honest, it sounds like it was an inauguration.
it seemed like it, right? I mean, it was historic. I mean, it really does kind of feel like one of those moments that if you were there 10 years from now, and you're looking at LSU 10 years down the road, you're going to say, I was there really the day that LSU changed and its athletic department for the betterment really came out as good as it could have come out on this side of the deal and moving on from Joe Oliva and to Scott Woodward.
And look, I meant that kind of as a phrase of endearment, because typically at an inauguration, hey, everybody is in the same party. They all voted for you, right? They all campaigned for you. A bipartisan place like LSU was all in lockstep today, and I think that's a big part of this. Everybody is in line. All right, before we finish this segment, the people, they probably string me up if I didn't ask you at least one recruiting question. I've gotten word that the LSU staff feels like the kid they just got out of California, the wide receiver, a four-star, that he might even be undervalued for the spot he's being rated at nationally. They think he might be one of the best in the country. So I'd love for you to evaluate him. And when you pair him with Kayshon Booty from Westgate, I mean, just how special is that pairing?
Well, you start with two guys, and Booty is one of the best, you know, track athletes in the country. And Jermaine Burton's no slouch either. He's a 4.43, 40-yard guy that dates back to last year when he tested, and he followed that up again this year. He's in the top 10 overall in the country in terms of guys that have run through the opening regional camps in 40-yard dash times. Not only that, his shuttle is off the charts, about 4.13. So his straight line speed and his quickness side to side is unbelievable. And he makes plays. He's productive. He actually plays with one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and Jaden Casey, he's committed to Fresno State. He wants to stay home, but he's a four-star quarterback. And so both of them have really become one of the top QB wide receiver pairings in the country in this cycle. But Jermaine, there's a good chance he is undervalued. I mean, he's got He's exactly the same height, weight as Ja'Marr Chase was coming out of high school. He's got a 40-yard dash that is about a tenth of a second, a little bit more than a tenth of a second faster. And then his shuttle is just a hair faster than Jamar's when he came out of Rummel. Now, 2 years ago in terms of the testing timings. And so, I mean, that says a lot. And Ja'Marr ended up being, I believe, like right around 15, 17 range overall in the country. And, I think that's kind of the ceiling right there. I don't know if he's necessarily a top 10 prospect, but he's right there. He's got a chance to be in that 15 to 20 range, and he's right at 35 overall. He'll have a chance to be a five-star prospect for sure.
He is Bill Ambody. Plies his trade. Go247.com. We got to go to a break. When we return, he's really going to get his inner Shea Dixon on. He'll channel that. We're going to flip the script. I don't even know the topic. I don't care. I'm ready to ball. We'll be back. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
No Coach O music intro today. That's okay. We'll get our mojo back next week, but we got our man back. Billy Embody stuck around for us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. All right, Billy, you've waited, who knows, 3 years for this, right? Shea's been doing it on this show for about that long. It's time to flip the script. What that means, it's your show, it's your mic. Ask away.
Well, thank you, Ben. I appreciate that and having me on. So, the NFL draft, one of the most exciting times of the year, really, for me. I mean, I love tracking the draft and some of the theories that go along with that pre-draft allure of these mock drafts and all these insiders and who falls and who's a reach and all of those things. So I've got a few LSU questions for you, and then I want to hear your opinion on a little bit of the Saints as well. But we'll lead off with kind of the negative of the NFL draft, which is some of these insiders and draft analysts taking a look at Greedy Williams, who started off as a top 10 pick on pretty much any mock draft you looked at just shortly before the end of the regular season. He leaves school early from LSU. He doesn't play in the Fiesta Bowl. All of a sudden, he's right on the outside and just inside, depending on who you look at, of the first round on these mock drafts. Ben, if you're an NFL GM, what's your assessment of Greedy Williams, and where would you take him if you could?
I love size, and I love speed, and sometimes you're lucky enough to get both. And my thought is this. I see a guy on kind of either end of the spectrum. I remember Dante Jackson making the late push up boards, right? Getting toward that early second-round type of status. Now we see Greedy Williams dropping from what we thought was perceived top 10, top 15, maybe toward 30, 35. And I'm a little confused. I'm not sure why, just because of blazing speed, that Dante Jackson gets that much of a bump. And then on the other hand, it seems like because he's a poor tackler in the open field, Greedy Williams is getting that type of demerit. He's probably the best cover corner that I saw at LSU maybe since Mo Claiborne. Take Patrick Peterson out. Take out Tyrann Mathieu because he was just the most instinctual of the bunch. But when you watch Mo Claiborne at LSU, sometimes I watch the film of Greedy and I have some vivid memories there. Only difference is I think he's probably an inch and a half taller. So the size, the reach, Greedy seems like he has a chance to be the real deal. If I'm an NFL GM, I think he needs to go somewhere in the middle of the first round. If you want to take a flyer toward about 10 or 11, where Vernon Hargreaves in Florida went a few years back, that would seem about right to me. Eli Apple, even further back, who's now a Saint, went to the Giants, kind of in that same range. I don't know why Greedy is not considered on the same level of some of those guys. I'm trying not to do Homer radio here, but I think he's kind of in that 15 type range. I don't know why he's fallen down like he is. But again, I use the Dante Jackson thing as kind of being an example, Billy. You can rise, you can fall, and it can just be on people's whims.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's some gamesmanship, so to speak, with the NFL draft in terms of Greedy and trying to play hands certain ways, and that's why these draft analysts think he's falling. but he's somebody that I just love as a cover corner. I think in today's NFL, when you have a guy with that length, that size, I mean, he's, for me, surefire middle rounder, middle of the first round. So I'm with you on that. I think the physicality thing is a little overplayed, especially in today's NFL. On the flip side of that, to flip the script on falling and rising prospects, Devin White has sat in that top five, that top 10 range the entire time. What do you think of Devin White's potential as a pro? And some people compare him to Patrick Willis. Is that a reasonable comparison?
That bar might be just a little high. I'll compare him to the guy that was in his shoes last year, Roquan Smith out of Georgia, right? Both Butkus Award winners, both guys that are thought to go top five or six at a position, sort of like running back where you don't always go that highly. I think Devin White is a better tackler in space. I think he's better in coverage than Roquan, but I think the former Bulldog is a little better getting behind the line of scrimmage as a blitzer and maybe used as a pass rusher as an interior linebacker. Either way, Roquan showed what he can do year one with the Bears. If Devin goes somewhere, let's say five overall to the Bucks, he'll make an even bigger impact in his rookie year than Quan Alexander did, and he was special, Quan, as kind of an undervalued rookie. So I'm all in on the future for Devin White. I think he is a 5 to 10 time pro bowler in his career, and I think he's going to be outstanding tracking down ball carriers. Good luck if you try to run side to side with that guy in the middle.
I'm with you. I love him in that range as well. I think he's somebody that gets a little bit too much hate for some of the missed tackles that Pro Football Focus kind of brings attention to. People always kind of wondered during the college football season, why wasn't Devin White one of LSU's best players in terms of their rankings when he just would rack up tackles and tackles and tackles and tackles for loss. But that's kind of their formula, but he's always around the ball, and I think you can't say enough about that. On LSU's offensive side of the ball, in terms of the draft prospects, Nick Brossette coming off a 1,000-yard season seems like a really patient back to me. A lot of people have him going undrafted. His 40-yard dash wasn't incredible. Do you feel the same, or do you think he ends up being drafted? And if not, does he have a chance to make a team out of camp?
I don't think he's drafted, and I don't love his chances of being on a roster come Labor Day. And I hate to say that because of the quality and caliber of kid that he is. His senior season took me by surprise. I think a lot of other people as well. He deserves a lot of credit for that. There's a chance for him to play some professional football. I just don't know if it's in the NFL. Again, in the modern era, that makes me a hater, but I'm just trying to be realistic. I don't think he has some of those, not just speed intangibles. I don't know that he's the best pass blocker. I'm not sure that he's the best catcher out of the backfield. Darrell Williams, for example, last year had that as a feather in his cap. So I'm not too high on Brissett's chances of making it in the NFL.
And then Foster Moreau, somebody who is probably, in my mind, criminally underutilized, but with LSU's issues on the offensive line, he was kept in a lot as a pass blocker. Do you think that teams are potentially overlooking him as a legit tight end option because of how little film he has as a pass catcher?
Actually, I think they're on to the secret. So quite the opposite for me. I think he's going to be snatched up, I don't know, Billy, maybe the third round, and that's not something many would have expected. There has been a comp out there, and it's a little generous, obviously, to Jason Witten. And I can see the physical comparisons and tools. If he is 80% of the player that Jason Witten was, somebody should take him in the second round. I think the guy's going to be an absolute steal in this draft. I think we're going to look back in 5 or 10 years, and we'll be having the conversation, why didn't LSU use him more in the passing game? So I think somebody's getting a real bargain in that kid.
Very, very good stuff, Ben. Finally, the New Orleans Saints. What is their biggest need in this draft, and are there any guys you really have your eyes set on for the Saints?
I'll tell you this, Foster Moreau would look pretty good for them. The Jared Cook thing will only last for 2 years. He's also not much of a run blocker, so wouldn't mind seeing Foster Moreau, but I'm not sure that's worth using your second-round pick. But I also think there's a chance they trade up, whether it's into the first round, maybe a second pick in the second round, who knows. I hope they address O-line first, D-line second. A lot of draft analysts in New Orleans have it the other way around. They think with Sheldon Rankins out for half a season, you need to go D-line first. I think they did a pretty good job of addressing that with their offseason moves. As far as the O-line goes, you've got the often injured Teron Armstead at left tackle. You lost Max Unger, and you replaced him with kind of a so-so center from Minnesota who's been around for a decade. That ain't good enough for me. I hope Will Clapp, Cameron who's the kid? The kid from Catholic and Baton Rouge. Oh, shame on me, who went to Southern Miss. But the other interior lineman they got who's young. I hope one of those kids steps up. I'm not confident they will. I'd like to see the Saints go interior offensive line second round and maybe peppered again late in the draft.
Very, very good stuff, Ben. Terrific job, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. Thanks so much, man.
It's always good to be a guest on my own show, and it's great to talk to you. Billy, keep up the great work at go247.com. We'll holler sooner than later.
Sounds good. Thanks, Howdy.
Well done. For real. Billy Embody, got to give it up for him. It's not an easy seat to be in. Can get a little hot asking the questions. We'll come right back in. We'll let you call us, 706-0111. That plus some shade to throw. This, of course, is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
That's it. That's all as far as the scheduled guests are concerned. But we still got half an hour to go and plenty to kick your way. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Scuffling back in on 103.7 The Game. Your time to call in. It's right now. 706-0111. While we wait, I've got a lineup update for you. LSU taking on Lamar tonight at the box. 6:30, your first pitch. 6 o'clock, your pregame show. Clint and I bringing you right there. And LSU has released its starting nine. They're starting to get healthier, and you'll catch that drift here. It'll be Josh Smith leading off and playing short. Broussard batting second, playing second. Antoine Duplantis batting third and right. Cabrera cleanup and left. Beloso at first base tonight, batting fifth. It'll be Willis DHing at sixth. DiGiacomo in center, batting seventh. Bianco playing the hot corner, batting eighth. And then Saul Garza catching and batting ninth. This will be the third straight start at catcher for Garza. Pulmonary reportedly very pleased with the way that he acquitted himself over the weekend against the Florida Gators, especially the way that he threw it as a backstop. And your pitcher, Landon Marceau. And so LSU trying to get him back healthy toward the starting rotation, and certainly it'll be all hands on deck. They'll take whoever they can get. You need four starters once you get to the postseason. To heck with this two and then whole staff. We've seen that year after year. LSU's got Cole Henry right now. Eric Walker. Feel pretty darn good there, right? Well, things rotate. You want to get Zach Hess in. You need to get Landon Marceau healthy tonight. Just another opportunity to take steps toward doing just that. All right, I'm excited about throwing shade today. I'll give you your daily reminder, but we've actually got some audio. Scott Woodward laid it down real proper-like. We'll get to that. But here's the reminder that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their management. It's top-down. Starting with Mark, they'll sit down, create a vision with you, and then they'll fulfill it. And before this football season, you're going to be on that patio every single night, every single weekend. You'll have your neighbors. You'll have your friends and family only when you want them, but only if you step your patio game up and take a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Spending your life on Twitter is a waste of your life. I've suggested that to Clint. He doesn't believe me. Maybe he'll listen to Scott Woodward. And this sort of unprovoked reaction to how sports writers, to how some of the fandom out there get engaged with social media, I think he's absolutely spot on. And this time, I don't have to read it to you. You could listen to LSU's new AD.
Hey, man, only 20% of this country have Twitter accounts. And of those 20%, only 10% are active. And of those 10% that are active, only 2% are hyperactive. So they're creating all this noise and BS that's out there. And frankly, you know, look at it half full. Things are good, and things are going well, and we're doing great things, especially at these incredible institutions of higher learning. And athletics is a key part of that. And That's how I feel about it. You know, we can talk, and we'll have plenty of times to talk about what's going on and what's right and what's wrong. And there is some wrong. I'm not denying that, but God darn, there's a lot right.
Lunatic Fringe. He absolutely singled you out. And Clint, you're right there in the middle of it, brother. I say that with love. That was glorious. That was factual from Scott Woodward. It is the not-so-silent minority. And they always try to run some form of a lynch mob. Doesn't matter if it's Twitter. Doesn't matter where it is. Message boards. It's always that small group that tries to speak for everybody. And it's funny because at Tennessee, it looks like that helped contribute toward their head coaching situation, if you remember that right, for football. We've seen this time and again. People don't like the hire. No, you can't do that. Bring us somebody else. Give us Barabbas. Okay, post-Easter, I can't say that. But you get my drift. He absolutely crushed the Lunatic Fringe there, and he's right. Plus, Scott's hip to the game. Here on this side of the basin, Lafayette, the Acadiana area, we're Facebook peeps anyway.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
You had to know that was coming today. From the moment he said it at the presser, and I hate to go full out Walter Sobchak on you, right? From the Big Lebowski, but am I wrong? Or in this case, is he wrong?
He's not wrong, Ben. I definitely have to agree with that. It definitely, talking about the silent majority, silent minority, as you put it, I think that was definitely the right way to go about it, because I definitely feel like it is kind of a silent minority, especially in certain situations like we saw with the Wilt, with Oliva being out and everybody was emailing LSU to fire him along with a lot of other words we can't say on the air. So, yeah, I definitely have to agree with you. I agree with what Woodward said there.
Not so silent minority. Believe me, they are anything but silent. And here's the thing. Twitter has its uses.
Yeah.
Sports information, political information. That's about it.
Yeah, basically.
And then you know, snotting your nose into the mic. We'll put that on Twitter as well before it's over. Post shade. He's absolutely spot on about that. I have reduced my Twitter usage 1,000% probably over the last 2 years. Pretty happy about that. Tweet out the show lineup every single day. It's good to get information, like I just said, but it's not as good for hot takes. It's not as good for people's opinions on things. And I know that's why a lot of us follow those that write, cover, broadcast sports. I get it. That's why people follow me on Twitter, but I don't opine there nearly as much as I used to. You can listen every day, 4 to 6 for that. And there's the pimpage. All right, we got to hit the final break of today's program. When we return, Russell Wilson is the highest paid player in the NFL, and he's showing the love to some of his big uglies. That and a few other matters to clean up before we exit stage left. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Q plays us in. For the final time, this is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Phone line's open for you. We're going to go through a show without a call. Man, the dead of spring, apparently. 706-0111. That's okay. It's been a lot of fun. Virge Allsbury, Jeff Duncan, Billy Embody all crushing it. Clint, you'll notice I led off the program by saying that, no, my name is not RP3. That wasn't just pre-shade. I got to take a moment to give it up to that guy. 5 hours of radio in one day is a lot of radio. I have done that on an occasion or two before. That is monstrous.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely monstrous. Herculean task, if you will. 5 straight hours of radio. It's amazing. And trust me, this is coming from a guy who's done about like 11 hours of producing sports talk radio. Trust me, that's tough.
Sink or swim question of the day, part two. More difficult feat. 5 hours of on-air hosting or 11 hours of producing?
5 hours on air hosting, because you got to think about it, Ben. if it wasn't for a day like today where you had Scott Woodward kind of sound coming out at noon, you can about imagine you'd probably wind up rehashing a lot of the topics that you would have at from 6 to 9 a.m.
True.
His two to four.
His two sessions were divided up with a really meaty storyline
yep.
that emerged in between with a lot of great sound and kind of tidbits that rolled off of it, right? I mean, already today, talking with Verge, just our own jumping off points, talking with Billy Embody. There's the whole gaming and sports and how that may intersect with
that's
LSU and collegiate sports, right? There's the idea of where Will Wade stands with Scott Woodward. So much that you really could sink your teeth into. But, again, tip of the cap to RP3. Yeah. Big performance. You can almost say it was Cal Ripken-like, at least for a day. All right, I got a few things to end up with here. And this just broke here within the last hour. Brett McMurphy with Stadium Television, one of many reporters that are reporting the NCAA rule changes that have gone through in college football. And the biggest one is a direct byproduct of LSU and A&M playing a 7 overtime game. Here's what Brett McMurphy tweeted again within the hour. NCAA OT rule changes for 2019. If game reaches a fifth OT, teams will begin to run alternating two-point plays rather than offensive possession starting at 25-yard line. And the absolute greatest in response to that, Jason Caldwell, my good friend from inside the Auburn Tigers, penalty kicks are next. He ain't wrong. Some post shade off the top rope there from Jason Caldwell. There you have it. Once you get to the fifth overtime, alternating two-point conversions. I know what they're trying to do, and they're going to say it's for the safety of the game and the best interest of the student athletes, but I don't know. You had supported this, CD, because at first blush, they're trying to expedite things. They're probably trying to protect Vegas with the over-unders. Pound the over once it goes five overtimes.
Yeah.
I don't know that I love this at first glance.
I'm okay with it, Ben, and I think it's largely because of one thing and one thing only. Think about it. How many five overtime or more games have we had in like the last like 5 or 6 years? You can probably count them on your hand.
I'm gonna guess an average of one or one and a half a year. I'm gonna guess. So over a 5 year span, let's just say 6 or 7.
Yeah. So let's go with that. Like I said, you have that little amount. Like it's a good thing for that rare occasion, for that anomaly, if you will, amongst the 130 teams in the FBS right now, or even in the FCS, if you want to throw that in as well. It's a rare occasion, so I'm okay with it. As long as you don't do like the after the third overtime, you go to a shootout, basically.
Maybe one of my favorite Clint points of the new year. And we're only like 4 months and 23 days in. But that was one of my favorites you've made yet. Thank you, NC2A, for a rule change that affects, I don't know,
like
0.005% of the ball games that are played.
Yep.
Thank you for that. You want to weigh in? You can. LSU, A&M. On the verge of penalty kicks from last year, you could call us 706-0111. I teased the idea at the end of last segment, right? Russell Wilson, we now know he's the highest paid player in NFL history, and he makes sure that his big fellas up front are taken care of. I really like this. According to a report that I just caught again from the stadium, those guys are doing pretty good work out there. Russell Wilson gifted his Seattle offensive linemen with $12,000 in Amazon stock. You got to love that, right? Now, in fairness, I'm doing some bottom ticker reading. I don't know if that's, what, $2,400 per lineman, equaling $12,000 total, or each of them got $12,000. If that's $12,000 apiece, hey, even if it's not, if it's $2,400 for five of those cats, that is pretty sweet. And it's almost like your grandma that buys you something that you can't cash out until a later date. Here's a CD.
Yeah.
Son, here's an annuity. I kind of like this because you can't take this and go make it rain at the strip club. Russell Wilson's going to make sure that you're investing in your future. Not bad,
yeah.
Clint.
It's $12,000 each, actually, Ben. So, yeah,
That's awesome.
That is awesome, you know.
Highest paid player in the NFL, and he's giving it back to the guys that help keep him upright.
That's awesome.
By transitive properties, does Eli Manning get to kick each of his linemen in the nads? If Russell Wilson gives each of his $12,000 in Amazon stock, the Giants' offensive line last year was one of the most comical things
I've
ever seen.
Well, the last few years, too, when you think
about
true.
It. That's true. It's not a new development.
Yeah. Like I said, if he hasn't done it already, why hasn't he, in all honesty? Like, Just line them up.
Everybody in New York right now is clamoring
just
for Daniel Jones, right? The kid from Duke. And somewhere Eli Manning is laughing his backside off saying, he can have it. Seriously, just make sure I get my last few checks. Play behind this line.
Exactly.
Why do you think we give it to Saquon Barkley every play? So I don't have to do anything else because I don't like standing behind him anymore. And I'm not mobile, so hopefully you are. I just love that. Everybody says, well, he's probably threatened by Daniel Jones. He probably welcomes Daniel Jones to come in. Somebody else try this. These guys are laughable.
Or anybody, really. I mean, we're talking about Daniel Jones. I think another guy that they should at least think about is Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State. I think he's a guy that you could wind up probably saying. I know at least this was the perception.
I don't have it in front of me. They're picking 17, I believe, overall?
No, they're picking 6th overall and 17. They have 2 picks in the first round. So they can.
Oh, boy. I would rather take my chances with getting Daniel Jones at 17.
Yeah.
I feel like Dwayne Haskins at 6 is a bit of a reach. I'm just not completely sold yet. There's not a huge body of work. And I know that for some of these guys, there haven't been, right?
Yep.
Not every guy that comes out has been a 2 or 3 year starter at the collegiate level. I understand. I just don't know about Dwayne Haskins. And he's played behind really good quarterbacks, collegiate quarterbacks at least. If you noticed, I don't know if this was slid past you or not, Jeff Duncan, he kind of caught me off guard when he said, don't forget about JT Barrett on the Saints practice squad. Sean Payton loves him. And so that's just one of the guys that Dwayne Haskins had to sit behind. So I don't know, man. 6 overall. I know it's a quarterback heavy league, or at least when you get to the NFL draft, it's quarterback premium. You got to trade up to get them. You got to take them earlier than you'd like.
Yep.
Well, you better hope that you get a Baker Mayfield. You better hope that you get a Pat Mahomes, a Deshaun Watson, because sometimes you don't.
Yeah, and I think whenever you look at that, I think you, if you're wanting one of those players, a Pat Mahomes, a Baker Mayfield, you got to be looking towards next season, because when you just look at the quarterback draft class, outside of Kyler Murray, who else is really intriguing to you? Because it feels like Daniel Jones doesn't necessarily pop off the page.
I would take a flyer on Jones.
I guess from Duke, it's just not necessarily the beast of a school like an Ohio State or even an Oklahoma in recent years that I can say outright, oh, hey, this guy's been able to play at a high level for a very prestigious university like Oklahoma. Like I said, I'm just more interested in what's going to happen next year, because that quarterback class is pretty stacked.
Yeah, it's going to be really good in 2020. Hey, before we shut it down, our guy James Moran, Tiger Egg Magazine, just pumps it out when it comes to LSU baseball. A couple of things he noticed within the last 5 minutes. Okay, this is what Twitter is good for. Take that, Scott Woodward. James Moran reporting that Gavin Dugas is warming up behind Brant Broussard at second base as we speak. Hal Hughes working behind Drew Bianco at third base. So slowly but surely, some of the injured battalion are coming back. Zach Watson is with them, and Maneri said yesterday to reporters he thinks there's a good chance that those three play this weekend in Tuscaloosa. So a very busy Tuesday. Scott Woodward introduced as LSU's AD. We played you some sound. We went right to one of his good friends and now one of his cohorts, Virg Osberry, Deputy Director of Athletics for LSU. We want to thank him for his time. Jeff Duncan took a timeout from just sunbathing in the sand trap at the Zurich Classic to talk Saints NFL draft with us, and Billy Embody, pretty darn good Shea Dixon impression, if I could say so. It's not always easy to do what he did, but he hung in there for 25 minutes. He answered the questions, and then he asked them. I encourage you to give his page a look, go247.com. And that's how 2 hours comes and goes on a Tuesday. Do want to thank all of the guests, all of you for listening, interacting on social media, but not calling. You were bashful today. We'll get you back on a hump day. For the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love, and you've been listening to Bumper Sports, LSU Lamar. Coming up next on 103.7 The Game.